Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Ron Greer, Dr. Paul Hall, Stephanie Thayer, and Dr. Craig Thayer in Raising Expectations.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this post-election version of Raising Expectations. And we're going to have a great show tonight. We do have back with us, as you know, Dr. Jim Robbins from the Institute, IWP of World Politics in Washington, D.C., the Dean of Academics, Senior Fellow of National Security Affairs at the American Foreign Policy Council, and a former Special Assistant to the Office of the Secretary of Defense. He really is someone who's going to have some great insight for us later, but we're going to share because he's teaching a class here tonight. And he's going to jump out of that class and straight on the screen to you via TJ pushing the button. So don't worry, he'll be with us in just a while. But in the meantime, we're sure glad you're here. The whole team's here tonight. So we can say, que sera, sera, we're all here. It's going to be great. So we're excited to have you. Of course, on the West Coast, we have Dr. Paul Hall, who is a theologues each week, a specialist in that, in the great metropolis of Lompoc, California.
That's the one. That's the one.
You know what? It's a great place. And we're going to have some more about that coming up for you. You're going to love that. So Dr. Paul's going to have some great insight tonight all about Lompoc also. So it's going to be good. So if we go there and we go all the way across the country, this week we do have somebody. We had fun last week, Steph and Tank. We said all the way to the west side and there's nobody there because we knew you were on vacation. So when everybody looked, I'm sure. But anyway, they're here tonight. So all the way from Georgia, right in the corner of four states right there. You have before you, first of all, Steph there, CEO, founder of Quenching Well. She's a health and wellness coach, a specialist. She helps people to manage their weight, know what to eat, how to eat, how to take care of their body, which is the temple of God, as she says. She's a wonderful Christian lady, a great wife and mother and leader in all that she says and does. And Steph, we're glad you're back. It's good to see you. And also to her left, or your right, if you look at the screen, there's your wonderful husband, Dr. Tank. There he goes. He's still on vacation. But that Tank there, who is a trauma surgeon, and he's also a specialist in nutrition also. You name it. There's medical things. He knows so much. He's a walking bag. His new book's going to tell you all about it. It's coming up pretty soon called Saved. We're going to be pushing that for you and telling you lots about it. It's coming up. We're excited for it, Tank, and we've seen some of the manuscript. We're excited to be hearing about your book real soon. So that's coming up. So welcome to the Thayers that are here, and then we're going to go from there all the way back to the great state of Texas in Central America. The leg upon which the United States rests right there on Texas, as you can see, it balances it out. And one of the key balancers in that state is none other than Pastor Ron Greer from McKinney, Texas. How'd I do, Paul? That was good, huh?
That was really good, yeah.
That was good. He balances it out. So anyway, hey, we love Ron. He's one of our favorite pastors in the world, and we're blessed to have him as part of our family. And he works with Men in the Mirror, and it helps guys to discover who they are. They've come through difficult times or not, whatever it is. He leads them to a working, vital, manly relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ and what that means and helps them to understand. And more than that, he's got a wonderful sense of humor that just makes you feel like you've known him all of your life, like as do everybody on this platform right here. They're a wonderful group of people. So we're glad that you're here tonight, and I'm going to throw out a thought here. This is post-election time. Has anybody anywhere out there heard anything about elections in the last few days? Or
what do we have?
Yeah, have you heard about it? Yeah, that's right. Probably a lot. In fact, I understand that by the end of January, the final counts will be in on all the voting. So well, look forward to it. And yep. And if they make it in December, it'll be a lot easier to take because we will have fudge in December. So it'll make it a lot easier in December to take those counts. Right, Steph? So we're good. So when Jim comes in here with us in just a while, he's going to cover all these things for us. He's going to have some great insights. There's so much. So many things. I've got one question, but I'm going to throw it out to this great group of people whom I love dearly. And just, you got a thought or a question about this election? Let's just throw out the thought and what you're chewing on about it. And let's get them out there and then we'll kick them to Jim when he comes on. Who wants to start?
Go, Steph.
Okay, I'll start.
Good, Steph. Good.
Not what was expected. I'm very frustrated that the same areas appear to have problems with collecting votes and making things happen. And there's a pattern here and it stinks. And so that I don't like. I also thought it was really interesting that I believe this was the second highest time voters under 30 had ever turned out. So that's probably a good thing overall. I mean, I don't know that it's great for my conservative values, but I would love to know why the media thought it was going to go one way and it did not.
Interesting.
Uh-huh. Would they come Those up are my random thoughts.
Yeah, that's excellent. Somebody else, let's throw these out and jot them down. Yeah, somebody else.
I was disappointed in the election, but I wasn't surprised. It didn't surprise me. I think some of the questions I had in my head was, you know, I wonder how they're going to kick this one around after it's over, you know, and of course now we're into finger pointing and stuff like that. My wife found a really neat little statement today. It says, America's Got Talent can count 5 million votes in an hour, but it takes Arizona, 5 years. To count the votes. It's so disappointing from that standpoint, you know. And but one of the things I'd like to ask James when he's with us is that, in a sense, you know, how did we miss it so far? Because his previous visit with us, he said it's really going to be a bad night for Democrats. I thought that was interesting, you know, when he made that statement. And here we are 2 weeks later, and it wasn't such a bad night for Democrats, you know. So
that's a good question.
Yeah. My thought.
Yeah. Well, not to toot my own horn, but I did say I have my doubts.
Yep. You did. Yeah.
Needless to say, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in the American electorate, U.S. electorate. I just people are, let's say it gently, ignorant of the process, ignorant of how bills are passed and who does what and what happens and doesn't happen. And then we are constantly bombarded with bias and skewed ideas about what is important, what isn't important. And so politicians tend to, on both sides, sort of play that. We downplay certain issues because we believe it may hurt us. And we upsell issues that are irrelevant. We know that we won't get an emotional response from people. And it's actually a legitimate, when I say legitimate, but an actual practice among people running an office. You want to stir your base, but at the same time, not give your opposition, you don't want to energize them. Right? So they end up, candidates who talk about issues that people aren't interested in, that aren't priorities to them. And then you have the media talks about and plays up issues that are emotional for folks, but not really that important. So and that's been going on in this election, I mean, to greater intensity I've seen in a long time. So, I mean, also on one hand, part of me says Republicans did a pretty good job that night. If you look at taking out a number of folks in the House, governorships around the country, and also state legislatures around the country. So in that sense, it did pretty good. The problem is places like the Senate, where you need it, something like in 2010 with Barack Obama, all of a sudden they lose, Republicans gain 10 Senate seats, kind of almost unprecedented. And you would think, given the economy, given the everything else going on in education and other things, that you'd have had this, had the same response. But my hesitation is, I don't see people as being as informed as they were even 10 years ago, are now. And number two, we are more partisan now than we've ever been. So it's like, it's why you can get a Fetterman, a guy who can barely put two sentences together, elected over an accomplished heart surgeon. And people go, wait, how is that possible? Because the parties themselves, they don't care about what people think, what they want. And they don't care about who's sitting in the seat. Because I think most people don't understand and realize the leadership in both House and the Senate controls what happens in the Senate. It doesn't matter what you want and who you are. They decide what issues are going to be pushed forward, and you become a vote for them. Mm-hmm. Now, they prefer people who lay down and will vote the way Schumer tells you to. And same on the other side. So Fetterman is a perfect candidate. He comes in, he'll do what he's told to do, and the people working for him will do it for him. Dianne Feinstein is another one. Dianne Feinstein, if you've ever been around her, she's suffering from Alzheimer's, but you'll never see that here in the media. She doesn't know who she is half the time or where she is, but yet she's still a member of the Senate and got elected again. So again, all that to say, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in American electorate, because we're just too ignorant of what needs to take place and what's important, what's not. And we're constantly bombarded with information that's irrelevant.
I was thinking about you, Ron, what you were saying that right then, and you mentioned something last week clicked in on me. They were talking about the fact that conservatives, like Stephanie was sharing, I mean, we all have strong beliefs. Yep. And we're anchored to those beliefs. And like you said a minute ago, they are more tribal. They go after a personality rather than a problem, as long as they know. And, you know, I believe it was Barack Obama who really got this thing going back when he was with against the naval commander there. Help me. You know, he was running for president.
Oh, John McCain.
Thank you, John McCain. Thank you very much. And it was that group that were already moving votes around back then. He brought it up then, and we all thought, well, that's impossible. But I think, as I look at this thing, I think conservatives are a little bit stubborn. I think sometimes we know what we're saying really is correct. And we've sat back as Judeo-Christians so often and always taken the loving approach. We don't come out of the stall. We're like the horse race. The other horse is halfway around the track before we come out of the container. And I was thinking, the big key thing that Obama did, what do you guys think about this? What do you all think about this? I think the big thing he did was this early voting. And I don't know about you guys, but this early voting, by the time Fetterman even started, he had, 200,000 votes that were already there before he even began to go on. Right. And this early voting thing that Obama got revved up, we all didn't think much about it. I found myself sticking to the guns, guys. I was saying, I like America where you get up in the morning, you go on vote that day, you label your vote, and by that night, you know who won. Right. That to me is America. But you know what? We're playing like a football team. They're bringing their team up to the line of scrimmage, and they're passing, running, kicking field goals. They have a varied offense. We don't do anything. We're just going to run. We're going to run. We're not doing anything else. We're going to run because we're going to do it that day. Right. So we had 5 million extra GOP voters this time, and it didn't mean anything. I want to ask him, like you said, where did that come from? Where did they go? What happened to Kerry Lake and all this, you know? And so I was thinking about that. We're going to have to diversify. We're going to have to wake up and get the early vote and do things. But then we don't know who's leading the party now. So I don't know.
Well, I think the other problem is it's the same problems that you know, we've been arguing with party leadership since the 90s. Again, because you have the same tired old strategies. And the idea is that, again, you target your base and then try to add a little to that, right? And they don't do anything to go outside that, because everybody that's advising you and people who've been in the party long enough, they do this vote to dollar sort of ratio analysis.
Yeah, right.
If going to a certain place and targeting a certain group won't produce enough votes for the amount of dollars it took to do that, they ignore that.
Oh yeah.
The proof in the pudding was a Donald Trump. It's Donald Trump went where most Republicans would never go. Like he went into Chicago, inner city Chicago, and spoke plainly to the people there, right? Yeah. Most Republicans won't do that. It's like, you know, those are votes that they automatically just give up to Democrats. And rather than saying, okay, let's talk about the real issues. The problem is they allow the media and the talking heads and the activists to define what the issues are.
Yes.
And then they talk mm-hmm. about that. There's an office within the Congress and inside the building from both parties, where they produce talking points.
Right.
They go out and they test certain things and they produce it. And then everybody stays on message, the same talking points. Doesn't matter if it's relevant to the vast majority of the public or not. It's mm-hmm. so that if I go in, if even when I campaign, I went to inner city Milwaukee, I went to Racine, and everybody said, you know, you're not going to get any votes there. Well, let's, how about this? How about we go there and tell them why it's stupid to vote for Democrats? And why these policies are much more beneficial to you. But it's like, okay, you can't get votes there. Okay, then why do I have all these weird black folks show up at my campaign events?
Yeah,
because they were hearing stuff that no one told them. Because, again, I don't care what the problem was. I don't care what the party analysts say I should talk about.
Exactly.
I'm in touch with everyday people. Let's talk about what's important to them. And if you do, they'll come out. But you got to get through all the media spin, all the garbage that get dumped on constantly. And the only way you get through that is you go to where they are and talk to them.
Well, I'm going to say one last thing. You are a light in that, Ron. That was a light, what you did, brother. And the thing that I'm thinking is, when you look at Obama and what they did also, they went in South Philadelphia, what we read about in Philadelphia. I mean, they went out to the housing complexes, the places where people basically were politically uninvolved at all. Yes. They went in, sold them on their point, told them they're going to take away your free stuff, and you're going to be in big trouble. And that's... Right. But you went in, you told them the truth, and they said, this is the real deal.
Yeah.
I don't know where we go from this. I'm sorry, I'm done. But that's a good
point. Well, let me say one other thing, right? I think that the other overarching issue here is, and I'll say it, it's going to sound radical, but I'll say it anyway, right? Because I sincerely believe that as long as you have mail-in ballots and advanced voting and also electronic voting, we will never, ever have another fair solid election again. Ever going to happen.
Makes sense.
No matter how many times you say it, people don't believe it. You can't. Right. You cannot secure that kind of election. It's always open to, I mean, fraught with all kinds of fraud. And Nevada and Arizona, they're not just late counting votes just by accident. If you notice, Georgia, Nevada, and Arizona, voting is late. Counting is late. Why? Two different time zone. You would think, okay, Georgia's got there before Arizona, but why? Because let's just see what everybody's comes there. Let's see what numbers look like. Okay, now how many more votes do we need to overcome the number?
Yeah.
You know,
and overnight. It always happens at night.
Exactly.
The camera gets turned off.
For 8 hours.
Right.
Like in Nevada, right? So they have a camera that's filming the counting going on.
Yes.
The response was, yeah, it happened. We'll make sure it doesn't ever happen again.
Right. Like, oh, sorry about that. Well, I have a friend, an acquaintance rather, in Arizona. She was frustrated. She's frustrated because they get to the polls. They were supposed to open at one time. It was open an hour and somewhat later. And then, you know, the reason they gave the poll workers gave them why they weren't open earlier, it says, well, we can't get we don't have the right code to get the machines connected.
That's
and so I'm asking, what are you connecting the machines for?
To what?
And it goes right overhead. Why does a machine have to be connected? Well, I mean, they have to be connected to the main district. I'm going through what means and for what purpose. You have machines in the building. You have the counter in the building. Why does it need to be connected? But she never got it.
It's fraud.
Several
of the things that I noticed were just a fundamental difference in the approach. The Democrats are about fear. They ran on, you're going to lose democracy, number one, meaning you're going to lose your power. That's what they're saying.
Right.
They ran on Medicare. right towards the end. They have 6 weeks before you can call it. This is their Hail Mary. You're going to lose Medicare and you're going to lose Social Security. No, you're not. Yeah. No one's going to do that to you. You know, the right to abortion was one of their things, which didn't end up being that high on the list for even them. But their fear, we're going to take things away, whereas ours are, we're going to improve the economy, make life better, close the border, decrease crime. You know, I mean, these are benevolent things that we stand on, not trying to scare them about, you know, any of these people, whether right. Democratic, Republican, or independent. We're trying to do good things for people. And so how the scare is bigger than the, you know, we're here to help.
And it's like you said in the beginning, they have to think. These people have to think, and that they're not thinking. So we're going after people to think and look at the benefit. And just like you said, Tank, wow, they're not thinking. They're just scared, so they do the other. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, think fear is probably the strongest motivator. Think of the moms that have lifted cars off of babies. Is. I mean, that's strong.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah,
wow. Anger is probably number two, but fear is, it trumps.
Yes, everything. It does.
One thing that I was reading that was interesting is a lot of school boards have flipped to more conservative. So there's a pattern going throughout the state for the schools. So that's good to see. Hopeful that maybe some changes can happen there for the kids. Keep them wholesome a little bit longer. That would be nice.
I would love to hope that also, Stephanie.
Right. Amen.
Because you're right. And it is one of the good things, because there are a number of places where that's happened. You have a lot of, especially here in Texas, that was a huge movement around the state here. And not necessarily conservatives. You have this weird mixture of both conservatives and moderates and just independents who converge together when it comes to schools and kids. It's one of those, it's sort of like what the party doesn't do, right? They focus on a particular group of folk and who they can rely on, and which again still never made sense to me. If you can rely on them, why do you have to spend so much time trying to convince them?
Yeah,
get out the vote, okay? But you have folk who have said, okay, we have a common interest and a common concern, and their children, and it crosses all kinds of lines. And all of a sudden now, you're threatening Mama Bear.
That's right. Cubs.
And they've come out in droves and started winning elections. Now there are three here that they lost, but it was by narrow margins. So it's those are the kind of things that you see happening that kind of makes you feel a little bit more encouraged. But my problem with school boards even also, and I encourage people to run for school board, city council, things locally where you can actually make an impact. The problem with schools is that they're not centrally controlled and they don't centrally operate, right? So either the state approves material and curriculum, and then the National Teachers Association and national administrators, national counselors, they influence what materials are in schools. So even if you have very conscientious conservative parents, on a board, they don't know the material come in until someone raises issues. And even in the process of getting rid of material, it is a nightmare. They have layers built in. Here's an example here in McKinney, Texas. There are at least a couple pieces of material. I'll see more than a couple pieces of material in the library, the school system. Now, there are people who've shown examples of it. Examples of stuff you can't read in a public meeting, but it's in the library of school. And you can't take it out of the school. The Library Association and the librarians, and protected by a bunch of things, won't take them out. Now they can move them to certain places, but they won't remove them. And you go, well, wait a minute. No, these are my kids. You can't have that in a library. And the bottom line, what we don't get is they're not your kids. The school, those administrators and those teachers, educators, these are our kids. You just stay out of the way.
Amen, Ron. Amen. And then we were worried about Mark Twain and Dr. Mary Finn, right?
Remember? Exactly.
Hey, I got a spark of good news. Chew on this one. Bounce it around. Kevin Kiley won.
I looked him up too. Yeah.
He sponsored three or four school board, like we're saying, and all of them that he sponsored won. Conservative, strong believers in the district. We know more about that than I do, Steph, but that area.
Already. Yeah.
Already.
I was watching his race, too.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, I as I said, around the country, conservatives made great gains. It's just, I mean, you listen to the media, it's like, oh, woe is me. It didn't happen.
Yes.
Yeah, the red tsunami didn't happen. But yet and still, you look at the governor's races, right? What is it? We had at least six, I think.
Yeah.
Six GOP, six turnovers, rather.
Yeah.
I mean, that hasn't happened since 2010.
Yeah.
So those kind of things are good.
Yeah. Very good. I also saw data that I think it's 72%, but it's over 70% of single women voted Democrat.
Mm.
That's a huge number.
Fear.
Fear. Yeah.
Fear. Yeah. Like Ankerson guys were saying.
Well, here's another one for you. So if you almost every poll, a legitimate poll, right, sort of shows about 70 to 75% of all the American population are opposed to abortion. But if you look at the numbers from voting, how many the numbers are staggering. The people who voted voted for abortions rather to keep it legal.
Yeah,
and it has shocked everybody. And again, is a as a matter of messaging and outreach.
You think that goes back to what Steph and you were saying, Ron? You think that goes back to they're getting this whole sphere? I was told today that the GOP is a second generation conservative and they're coming on strong. And I don't know what they answer that. We'll have to ask him. But that, like you all were talking about, that strata of voter, like you're saying, that did, because that's all they see. Yeah. All they hear. Does that make sense? That's all they're seeing is that's it. So check it no matter what. And you don't even know. And of course, they can't change that. They can't change it. So,
you know, if you even if you listen to debates and people interviewing, right, the media is so completely skewed left. Yeah. So even the way they phrase and structure questions, it's the conservatives are always put on the defensive. Right. And in my opinion, most people I hear cannot defend the position well. They do. They stumble around because the question isn't whether or not we should kill a baby in the womb. The question is, why are you opposed to a woman's right to her health, her reproductive health? So you would literally lock a mother in prison, a woman in prison for having an illegal health intervention or something like that. And you get, and they go, no, they start stumbling all over the place. Sorry, but I've yet to hear very few people who answer those questions right out and effective. They stumble at it or they avoid the issue altogether. It was an issue that was a good winner for Republican candidates. But if you notice throughout an entire country, they quickly moved away from abortion because there was the Democrats are going to use it and it's going to be a good tool for them. Then why did the Democrats stop talking about it?
Yeah.
They stop talking. They realize also if we keep talking and blowing this thing up, then of course. So what they did was they took the issue in certain places where they could get wins and they distorted it and won those races.
I wonder what would happen if we were on. And this is never going to happen because we're finite creatures. Mm. But I wonder what could happen if just once we could see this whole election in total honesty and see exactly where the American mindset and is in this nation. Where are we really? How do we know? Because you correctly, everything's skewed everywhere. How are we going to know?
Yeah. Well, again, I will go back to my tried and true. The pulpits are silent. The people.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
If the pulpit is lost and off, the rest of it will be as well. It's not possible.
But it's not their job to get in politics. It's their job just to preach the gospel. I've been watching those things pop up on my computer, and I'm saying, where are you guys coming from?
Yeah.
Are you backing away from it or like going into it? Come on.
Well, they are. That's it's. And again, I think I've had the same debate with pastors constantly. You know, well, listen, we want to stick with the gospel and stay away from politics. No. So killing babies is politics.
Yeah, right.
Mutilating children is politics. How about, you know, homosexual relationships? That's politics. I'm which part is politics? Yeah,
they're stuck in the Old Testament.
Yeah, because I can go to Scripture and I can find you all those things that God has talked about. And if God says yes or no, then I have every authority, every right to say, listen, this is what God says, and this is why He says it, and this one thing is contrary to what God says, and stop doing that.
Amen. Thank you. Amen.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, we have to dehumanize an enemy in order to kill him, right? So same thing's true with babies in some way. So I remember I was moonlighting at Mark Twain Hospital, no joke. and this couple came in and she had some infection and they had this, nothing related to what they were there for, but they had this path report. And they go, could you please read this and interpret it for us? Swear to God, this happened. I'm like, it was basically the pathology of an abortion late term. So it's the right arm of a 32 week infant. And I won't go through it anymore, but they were the pieces of this baby. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't want to be the one that explains this path report to them because it's going to be real right away. Mm. But I had to, and they were devastated because they just didn't know the baby was that far along, or which I think why the centers that have ultrasounds that show moms their babies early have an ownership to it. So they bonded and then they keep them.
Mm. They
do like me, give them up for adoption, and then you become a trauma idiot. So.
Paul, you got a thought? I can see the wheels are turning.
I was saying Francis Schaeffer, if you remember Francis Schaeffer and LaBrie, Francis Schaeffer made an observation one time. He said every abortion clinic should have a sign in front of it, open by permission of the church.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that's pretty pretty straightforward.
Straightforward.
That's probably one of if I'm angry about anything, I think that's one of the things that I've been most angry about for 25 years or more. It's just how the church is completely, you know, sort of backed out and closed itself in. We watched it, you know, during the 60s. I was on the other side of the issue, but in the 60s and 70s, it's like, the church was the sort of this dominant force in the country. I tell my kids this thing, right? And they cannot wrap their brains around it. I said, in Jackson, Tennessee, when I was a kid, they had a censor board. And on that censor board, there always had to be a number of pastors on that board. Said, well, what's a censor board? Well, they censor what comes on television or radio. Mm. Well, you can't do that. Yeah, they did do that. and prominent pastors in the city, if something was going to be aired on television, or something's going to happen in the city, you know, those pastors would come forward and say, absolutely not. And it didn't happen. Every time somebody ran for election, they were always make sure that you knew he's a godly man. And there was always some pastor giving testimony to how godly of a member this guy is that you want to vote for him.
Yeah, man.
No one would run and say, well, I'm a pagan. and then if you go back to, you can probably find videos of some interviews back in the, again, late 60s, 70s. I remember at least two Catholic priests who wore their collar. They were members of Congress. And on top, I can go through and point to four other ordained pastors who were members of Congress. Wow. It was one of those things where the church understood, you know, we have a responsibility to maintain, you know, God's kingdom here, and the way you do that is be involved in those people making public policy. Why in the world should we not be involved? It just makes no sense to me. But this day and age, the mentality is completely opposite. we shouldn't be involved in that. And going, explain that one to me. Just, you know, tell me, give me the rationale. It's not us. Who should be?
Yeah, we used to have a professor, Paul, and I. He used to say, "Who was it? Was it Harris?" But he used to say, "You know, Jesus said, turn the other cheek when it comes to standing up for truth." He said, and he's straight, dry, straight guy, Craig. He was just straight, dang. Though you didn't expect this, he really surprised us. He said, "He said, well, this is what you do, boys. He said, you remember the words of Jesus. He says, you spot them two cheeks and then you beat the tar out of them." He said, "Whoa, that's it." He said, and he said, so to speak. So to speak.
Right.
Verbally, yeah, verbally. But we don't stand up anymore. I don't know why we don't stand up.
I think the conundrum, having seen it at a church that our boys were going to youth. And there was I'll be medically here because I can say these things. We're equal, but not similar. She was born assignment female, but wanted to be male 2 years older than her actual age. So she wanted to hang out with the youth that were 2 years older that were male. And so the church had now this problem, right? You don't want to offend people. You don't, when you're up the earth, you're going to be about attendance and number of baptisms and the bees, right? Books, baptisms, and attendance.
Buildings,
yeah. So to walk that fine line and not be 100% truth and 100% love, they give up on the truth and they go 100% love and go, oh, yes, okay, be in our church and attend. We want to, you know, help. But if you're representing the canonical of the Bible, then you have to abide by that and speak the truth. Mm-hmm. And then unfortunately, when I do that, I say, well, look, I go to the adulteress that was drug out in front of all the Pharisees, you know, and Jesus said, let he who's cast the first stone, who's not sin, cast the first stone. So, you know, I'm not here to judge. That's what I'll say. Yes, the book says, the truth is, that's not the right thing to do, not for me to judge. But even in that scripture, Jesus gets down and says, but you probably shouldn't do this. It's not a good idea.
You know, Ron, my heart really resonates with what you're saying about the responsibility of the church. I had a professor in a seminary, and this was, 50 years ago? That was a while. He said a statement that he made, but I'll never forget it. He said, Baptist, and that's Joe's and my background. That's our tradition. He said, Baptists have learned well to answer the question that people were asking 50 years ago. I thought that was really penetrating because I see, you know, and Joe and I talk about this quite a bit. It's almost like there's two huge juxtaposed positions. One is that we want to be culturally relevant, right, to the exclusion of the truth that we stand for. Right. Okay, so you got the culturally relevant on the one side, and then on the other side, there's such a disconnectedness of coming forth with biblical answers, right, to the real questions that people are asking, you know. And so, I thought that was, you know, that's pretty insightful. Yeah, sure. But you know, today you got to be hip, got to be cool. You know, you gotta be one of the key phrases is seeker sensitive. Well, what does that mean? You know, do you become something other than what you are in order to attract something that you don't know what to do with? I mean, it's a real complex kind of thing, and it can be really disheartening. And it takes so long. I think it takes the church so long for the pendulum to swing. You know, we're in one of those real trends. I think from what I'm reading about what's going on in the local churches these days, you know, that they're battling those very fundamental questions. You know, well, here we are, post-COVID, churches are down 30% from what they were before, you know. And by the way, that was the trend before COVID hit.
It was
in decline.
Yes.
So we can look back and say, boy, COVID really killed us. Well, it wasn't COVID. No. You know, it's going on before COVID came along. Yeah. And I think it certainly makes less of God to say he didn't know that was coming. You know, surprise, COVID, you know.
So, exactly, Paul. Exactly. Yeah. Here comes James. That's such a good point, Paul. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, totally. This is going to be a tough one for us to connecting the audio. Harry, I can see you.
Hey. Hello.
Hi, Jim. How you doing, sir?
Jim. Hey, I'm doing great.
All right. Good to hear you. We don't see you yet, but it's good to hear you.
Don't worry. Yeah. I just got out of class. And so, yeah, it's not probably not. I'm just sort of walking around. It's not necessarily good
for you. Hopefully, nobody sees you walk around talking to yourself.
Right. But yeah, I'm on my phone. And in any case, I'm sorry I'm late, but our school chancellor was one of the lecturers tonight, and
oops,
he just wanted to have more to say.
So you listen.
We can hear you. We've been talking. We'd just like you to give us kind of an overview. What do you think about the elections? Kind of an overview, and for time's sake, we can get an idea of your insight.
A positive one to counteract my negative one.
Well, you know, when I was on before, I was a little more optimistic looking at the polls, and I guess I was as surprised as anyone. But I will draw a contrast between, say, how Florida counted its votes, 22 yes. million voters. Yes. In one night, got it done. And then these other states where, for some reason, it takes them a week to count their votes.
Oh,
we get these little, you know, tranches of votes coming in at unexpected times.
Coincidence.
The ratchet effect seems to be that the votes favor Democrats.
Oh.
And we watch this kind of slow erosion of any right. Republican margins of victory until, yes. for some reason, Democrats return to power.
Exactly.
And I, you know, I'm not going to make an allegation of something going on, but I will say that this type of system tends to decrease confidence in the electoral system as a whole.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And people who talk a lot about how we have to defend democracy and things like this, well, you're not defending democracy by convincing a lot of people in this country that something's up, that something fishy's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know they have explanations for why we have these strange vote counts, but I don't find them very credible. I mean, look at, was it New York 22, I think, is the one that's still outstanding from New York right. State. Right. Okay, well, why is that? They've had over 95% of the votes counted for about 4 days now. Republicans have, I don't know, it's a 1,000 to 2,000 vote margin that they're ahead. Well, where's the rest of the vote? Why isn't it being counted? What's going on? All the rest of New York State has been counted, but this one district, what's the deal?
Just doesn't make sense. Where do you, any other thing? We've got about 10 minutes. If you could, any other thought you'd like to get out to the people there that you think about the election, Jim?
Well, I mean, I think the polls were pretty wrong. If, you know, we were being told it was going to be a very different race. Mm-hmm. And I'm not exactly sure why that was, about why so many polls could be so wrong. You know, we...
You think early voting was a problem, like the Democrats said, such a big one, and we never do?
Yeah, early voting. And, well, like, for example, in Pennsylvania, where you had, what was it, 60 days
right.
of voting going on.
Right.
Much of the voting took place before people saw Fetterman in action.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I don't know if that would have changed anybody's mind who was going to vote for him anyway, but it could at least have given the voters more information.
Right.
So again, that's the type of you know, COVID-inspired adaptation that has stuck in our system, even though the, you know, pandemic is over, and increases this doubt in the electoral system. Mm-hmm. Not to mention the ability to cheat if people so desire.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely.
Quick question.
Reminds me a lot about a lot of, you know, back when Chavez kind of, you know, really got established in Venezuela. You know, it's all of a sudden, you know, you had these weird things happening in the elections. And well, as he moved forward, people finally realized what he was trying to do. The revolution that he had spoke of was actually taking place, just not the way they thought. So you have this deal where you have these inconsistencies in voting. You have this expectation because, you know, they count and have the numbers, and all of a sudden it doesn't pan out. I'm just one of those people who believe that when things don't make sense and it looks like it may be cheating, chances are it is. Just my brain, the way it works. People would be hard pressed to convince me otherwise. I think the polling was good. There were too many. You know, you have some polling organizations that are very, very reliable. Well, reliable track record, and then you have some that, you know, sort of hit and miss. I didn't see a big difference between the two. And to me, and that says to me, if you have liberal pollsters, you have conservative pollster, then you have, you know, some of the folks in the middle, and they're all showing the same things or close to the same things. I'm thinking something happened, you know, at the polls that wasn't supposed to happen. It wasn't as if somehow people just decided to stay at home, because right now some of the same people are reporting, like in Arizona. Yeah, when it said one of the largest turnouts they've had among Republicans in how many years? So how do you get the results that says, you know, you know, it wasn't a landslide? Yeah. I just don't think it's possible having a free, fair election ever again, as long as you have that kind of shenanigans going on with early voting and mail-in ballots. I don't think it's possible.
Yeah, completely. You know, again, look at Florida. They went back to the type of rules. And I know that, you know, it's like they said it's Jim Crow on steroids or, you know, these kind of things. No, they went back to the rules that we had in this country for decades.
Yes.
In every state in the union, you know, just like normal voting practices, bring an ID, you know, vote on the spot. If you need to cast an absentee ballot, you need a reason to do it. And then they count the votes in one night, and it increases the credibility and the faith that it was a fair election. And all these other kind of rules about, you know, ballot harvesting and, you know, mail-in ballots and 60 days or more to vote, and you don't need an ID, and you don't need a signed ballot, and all this other jazz. Whether or not people use it for cheating, and I agree, if you give people a chance to cheat, they're going to cheat. That's just human nature.
Yeah.
But it decreases public confidence in the validity and legitimacy of the vote. And so, again, those people who are very hung up on being the partisans of defending democracy, well, the very policies that they are encouraging are the ones that are hurting democracy. So they should stop it.
Where do we go from here, Jim, as the party that did at GOP, if you are a Republican, anybody? I mean, what do you think is going to happen now between the, you know, voting for the leadership or not, or waiting till December 6th, is it, with the election in Georgia?
Well, if the Senate side is lost, then the election in Georgia only matters to the extent that it goes from either keeps it a tie in the Senate or goes to a plus one for Democrats, which would be great for them. Right. On the House side, it remains to be seen. I mean, you know, it's still a lot closer than we would have liked, as, you know, those of us Republicans. And I'm still not convinced. You know, I know NBC was saying that they're going to win it and stuff. Well, let's see. Count the ballots already. We'll find out. You know, of the 11 races that Republicans are leading in, six of them are in California, and in which, like, in some cases, 40% of the ballots have been counted yet. You know, it's ridiculous. And we'll find out what happens. But it's, to me, it's not a slam dunk that Republicans are going to take the House. I know I predicted that, but again, I was going on the polls that were probably right. Mm-hmm. So we will see. But I think another thing, just, and I know we have limited time, but this issue of the inter-party squabbles going into 24 election, mm-hmm. and what Donald Trump is doing, and this, you know, Trump-DeSantis issue, or even Donald Trump attacking Glenn Youngkin, who's, you know, governor of my state. Mm-hmm. I think Republicans just got to get along. Right. It profits nobody to engage in this kind of, you know, internecine struggle, particularly when the Republicans don't really have a lot of power in Washington anyway. Hopefully they will in the House. And, you know, Donald Trump, whom I've been a supporter of since day one, he's going to knock it off.
Yeah,
it is right. Not helpful.
Yeah, I think the things he's been accused of and finally disproven and going on with, you know, Florida residents, et cetera, I think it's finally hit him. And he's, to me, it just seems like he's really bitter and angry. And it's pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand it. I've always been with, you know, Ronald Reagan's law about, you know, thou shalt not attack other Republicans. Mm-hmm. And particularly very gratuitously. I mean, why attack Governor DeSantis? He's winning. Why attack Governor Youngkin, who, you know, Virginia's not the easiest place for a Republican.
Right.
It used to be, but not these days. So why go after him? I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. And I have liked the fact that the people who have been attacked aren't pushing back. You know, they're not amping up the rhetoric on their side. And I think that's a productive way to go about it. Just like calm all this down and focus on what we can get done, shaping policies going into the election, and leave the other stuff for the primaries.
Well, I tell you what, Jim, if you'll hang with us 1 second, I've got to do a quick commercial. It's important. I've had people ask me this week, folks, you know that we run this program on donations and on your love gifts. And if you would like to give a love gift to help us out on this, any kind of a gift, whatever it might be, and God uses it all the same way, if you could go to bbsradio.com/raising expectations. This is what you'll see us on all of our sites. We're on 5 platforms running right this minute as I speak. So you can see right now it says donate. You hit that button, and this week there will be 5 steps to show you exactly how it works if you don't have a PayPal account. Really simple. They're a little different. That's why PayPal is so good. But right there, donate, you hit that button, and there'll be 5 things that you can do on our website right there to help you get through on that. So please help us out if you can. God bless you. And we thank you that you tune in each week. And I've had people again this week say, Joe, how do I do this? So it's on there for you. bbsradio.com/raising expectations. It'll look like that. And then hit the donation button and we will be blessed and we will be very, very thankful for what you've done. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've got about 3 minutes here and Jim has pulled in, jumped on us. We're so glad that you're with us tonight, Jim. We're glad the class went well. That's excellent. We really appreciate you, sir. And we've got what have we got? Yeah, I got like 2 minutes here. Anybody want a quick one sentence question you really wanted to ask Jim? We'll get him back.
Nothing? Wow.
Oh, boy, you're a good teacher.
Yeah, I know your thoughts. He knows what we don't know, so.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, any final thing you want to leave us with, Jim? That those were good points.
Well, I don't know. I'm kind of humbled by the way this race turned out. I thought it was going to be a lot different. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that it can't still be good. We'll have to see. Hopefully, Republicans can pull it out, you know, and get these remaining seats when the ballots are finally counted. But regardless, you know, have to keep moving forward and stay positive and look to the next election because it will come. And there's only so much damage can be done to the country before then. And, I think that 24 is going to be a good race no matter who the Republicans put up because, you know, now it was one thing to run somebody who they were saying was going to be a moderate and whatnot 2 years ago. But now people know this is what you get. And so I think that looking back, people say, weren't things a lot better, you know, back in the day before this all happened? And that's what people are going to vote for.
Absolutely. Well, Jim, we're going to call you again and ask you to come back with us. Thanks for being with us. Ron, love you, brother. You guys, Paul, T up there, thanks for being there. Steph, Tank, thanks. Love you guys, all of you. Audience, thanks for being with us tonight. Check in with us. Keep those cards and letters and actually just hit your computer. It's easier. God bless you and keep you till we see you again next week. And Jim, keep giving them the straight truth there at the IWF. We appreciate you and we'll be praying for you. Thanks so much on behalf of everybody. See you next week.
Thank you. Raising Thank you guys.
See you guys.
Bye. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous, but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk, listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556, or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.